This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Welcome one and all to the Back of the Nest Preview Podcast. I'm your host Terence Ford, and this week me and Sam Peskin are joined by Nick Gillard. Albert Curley is once again off on holiday somewhere. Maybe he's gone to Saudi Arabia or something. No, he's at a swanky BAFTA gig or something or the other. Who knows? Making many excuses not to be on the show, but Nick is here to deputise. Thank you very much for joining. Me and you had a good old time at Arsenal on Monday night, well, at least until the last minute.
We had a brilliant time at Arsenal. It was really good. Took the lad for his first beers with his dad in a pub at an away game. And a good time was had by all. I can't really remember the match, but it was a great night out. But as he said, after he'd finished, he's doing a cadet course for uniform services. And he had to spend 6 hours on Tuesday marching, and he was really hungover. And he said, I fucking hate Monday night football. Who invented it? So I told him the story of Rupert Murdoch and Sky Sports.
Well, that was because he'd done too much of this.
I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer?
This week, I've got a very special beer. But look. Heskiff's drinking fizzy water again, so we'll leave him out.
There's no fizz this time. I'm not even that sophisticated.
Nick, you've gone and bought a special beer, which I was looking at on Untappd, and seems they sell it at Welling United. Lots of the check-ins were from Welling.
Yeah, it's from the Bexley Brewery, and it's Golden Acre Pale Ale. I haven't tried it yet.
Go on then.
I'll give it a bit of a try.
Yeah, let's see how it sounds.
But it used to be called Golden Ale. And when you think about these craft brewers, and then you look at their address and it's on some bleeding industrial estate, it kind of takes away the romance of it a bit, doesn't it?
That's pretty much where they all are.
Yeah, well, it's got a good head and it is quite golden. It does say on the bottle that there's sediment, which shows that it's real.
Mm. Very nice. It does look nice.
That's very nice. Good fragrance. no, I mean, it's got a nice flowery. I was drinking neck oil the other day, and that had the washing up liquid aftertaste that Albert was talking about.
Fairy liquid, was it last week?
Yeah, a little bit. But this is all right. I might get another one of these. But I think it's because the local co-op. And I was a bit worried because you said about co-op beers being crap the other week, and I actually had one in my hand when I was listening to it, and I looked at it and thought, oh God, I'm not telling Terence about this. But I think they're having problems with deliveries, so they might be trying to source locally. So.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, well, that's good.
Get it's only some £1.60 a bottle. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, M&S is having, like they have loads of Gypsy Hill, for example. I was in there today looking at all the Gypsy Hills in there. Heskiff just shaking his head at me. I'm such a shill for M&S. But this week I'm drinking Sack Attack New England IPA, like as in Mamadou Sakho.
Oh, wow. Actually. So
this is actually brewed by friend of the pod, Nick. He went on a beer brewing course, and part of the course is that you brew and bottle your own beers. So this is a 6.7% Simcoe Mosaic Sabro Citra Pale Ale. And I hate to say it, but it's really fucking good.
Is it?
I really wanted it to taste like shit, but it doesn't. So congratulations to Nick on your lovely beer.
Will your legs give way after half an hour?
What? Yeah, something like that. I think we did this, didn't we? We played around with a Sacco beer blurb. But Nick, I'll be back down to Mamadou's, which is the name of the pub at the end of his garden, for a few more of these, that's for sure. Beer blurb. Now, in the absence of Albert, Nick, you've written one. So. Yes.
There were several to choose from. I was going to go for a Townsend one, putting hairs on your head. I was going to go for an IPVA.
Yeah, it's good. I like that.
But instead, we've got Romage Artois, which is an ebullient nooky ale that goes perfectly with an Irish risky chaser. Strong enough to get your phoenix rising, and if you're lucky, on the odd occasion, you might score. Be careful, though, a few too many, and you'll be an emotional wreck, slumped on the floor in tears, opening your heart out to your best mate. Not really a premier beer, but good enough to win a championship cup.
Excellent stuff. Romage Artois is very good. Yeah. Gee, we might have to source you to write all of these every week.
Don't tell Albert.
Albert, you've been raised by Gillard over here. what you got next week?
Albert, get off the red carpet and get back into the drawing room.
Well, yeah. Or he could just, whatever movie he's working on next, he can just get one of the writers to write one.
Does he employ one? I mean, he's got cleaner and an au pair. Can he employ somebody to go to BAFTA for him so he can do the pod?
Indeed. Right. Well, that's good. I'm impressed with that. So now, as a reward, you can talk to me about this Generation 11.
Oh, right, yes. I did mention it on the Arsenal pod, and now I've put everything away. It's a tournament to celebrate the fact that we're one of the oldest teams ever, and we helped write the rules for football, the original 13 rules, way back in whatever the date is on the back of our blue and white Blackburn tribute shirt, 1856 or whatever it is.
1861,
only 5 years out. It's really weird. You've got to have at least three over 50 players. Some have got to be in their 40s, and you're only allowed two under 40s on the pitch at any time. Yesterday, I'd found out that Alan Smith was managing, and we had AJ, Darren Ambrose, Eddie McGoldrick, and another player who I can't remember. And today, joining up, we've got an assistant manager. Yes, have you
that was Paul Stewart.
Paul Stewart's the assistant.
Yeah, Paul Stewart's the assistant man. And Leon McKenzie's coming onto the pitch.
Yes, indeed. So it's all being played at Hitchin, who again were one of the original teams. So just check out the Palace website. It's all on there. Or listen to the Match Report pod, and you can hear more about it on that one.
I would just like to say that I mentioned Paul Stewart as one of my favourite loanees ever at Palace, and now we're bringing him back for this cup. So I'm going to take some credit for bringing him out of the doldrums.
He's not playing, though. He's going to be assistant manager unless he's player assistant manager. I don't know.
Well, either way, he's there. So you're welcome.
He's there.
But whatever happened to player managers? They're a thing that you don't hear of anymore, aren't they?
What? Can you name me the last Palace player manager? Technically, he was player manager for half a game.
Was it Lombardo or not?
So I think he was probably the last official one. I think this time it was the last time as Dougie Friedman when he came on at Dulwich Hamlet.
Oh, okay. Does that count?
Assisted. It was a pre-season friendly, and he did assist Reece Alassani with a nutmeg pass.
So. Yeah, I remember that.
Indeed. Right. Hesketh, your reward this week is to talk about some Arsenal fan who says blood a lot, talking about Palace being known for a bird.
I thought you were going to say that I was going to have to do the Patrick Riviera thing, because in the we got a cab home, Vanessa and our mate Jason, and for a good 5 minutes you were trying to persuade me again to do Patrick Riviera every week, and I'm stalling because I can't do it. So I'm grateful that you're asking me to talk about some pillock off Arsenal TV or whatever he does. I don't even know what his name is, to be honest, but he's one of those, like, he's the one who always gets angry. Like,
he's the one whose hat we hung from the Holmesdale.
And someone put a video up of him after the Palace game where he was getting all annoyed because they were celebrating getting a draw against little lowly Palace. And he was like, they're not Man City, they're not Chelsea, they're not Man United, it's Crystal Palace. Crystal fucking Palace. And I was like, yeah, but you haven't beaten us at home for 4 years, I think, now. And then he was like, what are they known for? They're known for being a type of bird or something. And I was like, fucking hell. Your nickname is the Gunners, quite a macho nickname, and you refer to yourself as Gooners. So I think you need to spend more time sorting yourself out than worrying about a majestic bird like an eagle. We all know that's the best bird.
Let's face it, they left Woolwich because Charlton were too big for them. It was too close to Charlton. Exactly.
If you leave South London to go north, you've lost before you've even started.
Yeah.
So, I just thought it was quite funny, you know, that they're getting so worked up, considering how rabid their support was at equalising against little lowly Palace. But this bloke just, he's over the top for the sake of being over the top. You know what I mean? He's definitely playing up to the character, this guy. So I just think he's a fucking idiot, to be honest.
Did you see the bloke in the fur coat in the tier above us?
Where Terence and I were standing, sort of a couple of rows in front of us, where producer Billiam was actually two rows in front of us, but started sort of looking up and behind them, giving abuse to someone. And so we sort of like leaned forward, and you could just see this angry, like, red-faced guy in a really crap-looking fur coat, really losing it. And obviously, the more you lose it, the more the Palace fans are going to give you shit, and the more that we give you shit, the more he loses it. Did he get thrown out in the end?
I don't know. I can't really remember.
There was definitely, it's usually what happens, because you get told to sit down a lot, right, at Arsenal. And then if you don't sit down, you're out on your ear. So I definitely saw him storming off to one end of the row at some point. But I guess he had the last laugh. I don't know if it is a last laugh. Do you know what I mean? Like, the fact that Ramsdale run the length of the field to celebrate in the corner for a 2-2. It's harking back to Dan James equalising against Palace for Man United and then running over to the corner and, like, giving it all large. You're just like, you play for Man United, you're at home. And to your point, it is lonely Crystal Palace in that sense. Like, you know, you're a top six team, you should be beating Crystal Palace at home. There's no arguments to be had there. And your goalkeeper is running down the other end of the field to celebrate in the corner.
And it's not even a winner. Like, if you've won the game, at least you can be like, well, we've won the game, but you've equalised, man. Yeah, silly.
They celebrated more than Brighton with that equaliser, didn't they? I don't know how many people didn't see it, because the stadium was quite empty by that time, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I couldn't believe the amount of people flooding out between sort of 80 and 83, 4 minutes. It was ridiculous.
I can't see in the queue at Highbury and Islington Station afterwards. 20,000 steps I did on Monday. 20,000 steps. We walked all the way back to Angel. But the Arsenal fans weren't very happy at all, which shows how far we've come, I think. Yeah, and I just hope people don't find us out too much, because they don't know about Elise yet, I don't think.
Well, I don't think we know much about Elise, to be honest. We just know that he comes off the bench and gets involved in goals, basically. That's all we know about him. But, there was obviously with Wilf being out, there was a little bit of a tweak in personnel and not so much formation, because I guess Edouard played wide left for a lot of it, but drifted in midfield. I'll start with you, Heskiv. How do you think he did playing out wide left? And do you think it adds an extra option for us when we do come across injuries?
Yeah, I was a bit worried when we saw the team when we was in the pub, and I was a bit worried that we were going to go 4-4-2. But yeah, I think that the longer the game went on, obviously until he got subbed off, the better Edouard looked. You know, he's very confident on the ball. He looks pretty strong. Obviously, he's got a good touch. He was cutting inside really well. And I think it allowed Benteke to play better as well, in a way. So yeah, I mean, it's great to know that option is there. Not only can he play as a central striker, but he is just as good off the wing. And we've talked, you know, in previous pods this season about how good it is to have that depth on the bench. And you know, like we've said just recently, to have Eze coming back, Elise's still sort of getting cameos, Schluppi can come off the bench. You know, it's really nice to know that even if as an important player as Wilf is, it's out, it's not as much of a concern perhaps as it was in the last few years. And especially when you can play, you know, a striker out wide and it not really sort of affect his game that much, it's an even bigger bonus.
Yeah, indeed. Nick, Vieira's talked about it's going to be a while before Elise gets a start. Can it be that much longer if he's going to keep coming on and affecting games like this?
Well, if it ain't broke, you know, if it's working. I was looking at the stats on whoscored.com yesterday while I was doing my other job for the match report. And surprisingly, Ai's stats were mega on Monday. He had pass rate, success rate, 97% success rate. Loads of brilliant take-ons. And it's one of those really weird ones where he's an escaped goat, I think. Where he's blamed for lots of stuff, but actually, if you look at him, he's not doing too bad. Although you could say he was at fault for allowing Pepe's ball to go in for the first Arsenal goal. But isn't it nice not to rely on one player like we have done for as long as I can remember now, since Sean Scannell left? I think if we'd had anybody as good as Wilf for going forward and exciting me that much. Maybe there's been others, maybe Schmack as well. But it's just nice that we can do without him. Elise, yeah, he's got to start soon, hasn't he? But then who does he replace? Does he replace IU, who's reliable and is good at tracking back and supporting Ward? Because I think that's the job he does as well as going forward. And can Elise do that?
Yeah, it does kind of... the worry with Elise being on the field, I think, was apparent in the Arsenal equaliser, because Anderson saw that it was Elise going out to Tierney and chased him out with it, where it just felt really weird that the tallest player in our team run out of the box when the ball was about to be crossed into the box. God knows what he was thinking. I mean, that's kind of probably the third big error he's made this season. I hope all the cracks aren't starting to appear. But no, like, it's, yeah, and he obviously went out there to support Elise. And maybe he would have done that if it was IU, he would have trusted a bit more. Who knows? There's a lot to learn for Elise. We can't expect him to just, you know, be thrown in 90 minutes every week and just get it, especially... you know, coming from Reading, there's no way he's going to have this sort of pressing philosophy in his brain, and he's going to have to learn a lot. I mean, I thought you had an excellent game against Arsenal, to be fair, and it's a lot of his strengths. You know, he broke up the play for one of the goals and got the assist. Brilliant tackle. Really didn't allow him to settle on the ball. It was funny hearing, watching back on Monday Night Football and hearing him talking about how we were compared to Liverpool. Carragher was comparing us to Liverpool and saying, you know, this is what Mane does to Liverpool. I was like, whoa, Jesus, slow down a little bit. But talking about how we just were penning Arsenal in and blocking them in and not letting them out by bringing that winger over from the other side of the pitch. And really great performance. So yeah, just looking at his stats now, I'm surprised to see the 96% passing accuracy, but of course the tackles and the interceptions and all of that. The only surprising stat on there is that his one shot was on target.
Yeah, it was kind of down the keeper's throat. And what you've got to remember is now we've seen Edouard can play on the wing, on that side. If you're not going to play Ayew, then it's going to be Wilf out there, because I think both Benteke and Edouard is good to have on. Although, who do we have as a replacement striker? We've got Mateta, who likes to back heel, but you know, we don't really want to play him because we don't want to have to pay for him.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not going to be happening. I think and then obviously there's going to be Jeff Schlupp as well, who's going to be involved at points. But as much as people seem to not want Ayew in the team, I just can't see him not playing for the first 65 to 70 minutes of games every week because of the shift that he puts in and the way he defends from the front. I think it's just going to happen. And Elise is going to have to make do with the odd 20 minutes here and there. But if he's coming off the bench and he's getting goals and he's getting assists, then maybe it's the best way to use him. Right, let's get into talking about Newcastle. We're going to just go off to a short break and then we're going to be joined by a Newcastle fan called Chris. And we'll be talking about the coming weekend, Bruce being sacked and obviously the takeover and his feelings on that. But before we head off to that, just remember that you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code BOTN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code BOTN. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Open them up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Right, yes, we're now joined by Newcastle fan Chris. Thanks for joining, Chris.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Very good. As I promised in messages, I won't Andrew Marr you on the takeover here and really press you with some difficult questions, but I think we'll start fresh off the press with Steve Bruce's, you've all got your wishes, I guess. I'm not sure there was a Newcastle fan out there who wanted him to stay. So how are you feeling?
Well, yeah, great. I mean, you would think from the media response today that he was Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, and that he was one of the best managers of all time. And that, you know, I don't understand why there's all this rubbish being written about him being such a great bloke and a great manager, because he'd won seven in the last 38 games and he hadn't won a game yet this season, and watching him had been lousy. So I think we're happy. I think there was always a question about whether he should have gone before the Spurs game. We've probably thought that he should have done. We lost that game, so then we thought, well, he definitely should have done. If we'd won that game, I don't know what we'd be doing now. But I think everyone's happy to sort of move on and get a new manager in.
I saw a thing today, what Steve Bruce has said. This is a quote, an actual direct quote from Steve Bruce, lads. I think it might be my last job. It has been very, very tough to never really be wanted, to feel that people wanted me to fail and saying I would fail, that I was useless, a fat waste of space, a tactically inept cabbage head. Chris, that's a bit harsh, mate. Why did you write that to him?
I think he summed up his tenure pretty well in that, to be fair, a tactically inept cabbage head. I mean, he was hopeless, wasn't he? And of course, it's difficult because whenever you talk about takeover and how happy people are feeling happy because they're getting rid of Mike Ashley, a guy that didn't care about the club. And we disliked the managers that worked for Ashley that were yes men, the ones that, you know, came in and just towed the party line. And he was one of them. And he, you know, he came in on day one. It was an unambitious appointment, but one you'd come to expect from Ashley. He was never first, second, third choice. And that was it. He was mediocre and summed up a mediocre tenure. He might well be a nice bloke. He's probably a great bloke to have a pint with down the pub. Do I feel sorry for him? Yeah, why not? But he's getting £8.5 million. So, you know, it's the only football management seems to be the only career where you are you're rewarded for being bad at your job. And yeah, look, I think, you know, I wouldn't see why he would go and get another job. And I don't know who would employ him, but these things happen. So.
Well, maybe he can go off and write some more novels. I think he's done that in the past, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, they're impossible to get your hands on. I think there might be some audio recordings of him, though. But Saint-Maximin, who, God, there's no one in a Palace sphere who wouldn't want him in the team, that's for sure. He actually tweeted today saying that he's a really nice and caring bloke, Steve Bruce, and that he'll never forget like the way he made him feel and stuff. So what Maximin says seems to resonate with Newcastle fans a lot because he's your man, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And I think, you know, he came in from Nice and he was one of these that people had said had been difficult to work with, difficult to manage. And Steve Bruce seemed to get good results out of him. I don't think he improved as a player, though. And I think Bruce just had a tactic, which was give the ball to Saint-Maximin and hope for the best. And equally, you know, flair players like that perhaps don't enjoy training too much. And from what we've heard and read, Steve Bruce didn't put the hours in on the training pitch and he was off on holiday a lot and he gave them extra days off on training. So I can see he probably did enjoy working for him. And again, he probably is a nice bloke.
So, I've just been reading about Steve Bruce on social media. And here's his quote. I was talking with my son about the abuse a referee was getting. And he said, Dad, it's nothing compared to what you get. I looked and I was like, wow. But on the flip side, social media got me my dog back after it ran away from a firework display. Which is just fantastic. Two sides and all that to every coin.
Now, Hesketh, any love lost with Steve Bruce? I mean, for the context, young listeners, like young Palace listeners who might not know, Steve Bruce once upon a time managed Crystal Palace and we actually won 7 games in a row at one point and stormed to the top of the league and we were just slaying all oncomers only for him to then all of a sudden say, I'm going to Birmingham now, bye, when we were top of the league. And we replaced him with the outgoing Birmingham manager, Trevor Francis. Birmingham went up, we finished 14th or something in the same season. But do you care about Steve Bruce, whether he's a nice guy or not, or is it just see you later, mate?
Well, first of all, I don't like being in the category of not young Palace fans. So I'll take exception to that. No, I hate him. I never forgive, ever. So I don't feel sorry for him. You know, like we said there, he's getting 8 million or 8.5 million for being shit. So that's quite good. So I'm sure he's going to be having an all right life, isn't he? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wish he'd stayed on just because I think it would have given us a better chance of winning on Saturday, to be honest. But
I just to put to bed this nice bloke thing. I mean, he's a private landlord and has treated some of his tenants like crap. And you've seen that there's damp and mold and he doesn't look after them. And, you know, all this nice bloke, Steve Bruce, he is not a good bloke. And he's a multimillionaire. He was a multimillionaire before and he still is. So, yeah, I mean, I hate him as well, to be fair.
Well, for context, Julian Sproti is also a landlord. And it turned out that a colleague of my wife lived in one of his flats and she didn't know.
and said the washing machine's broken, and Julian Speroni turned up to fix it. So
I was just going to say, I can imagine him coming around with a nice bottle of red wine and sort of cooking your dinner and apologising. I can imagine him being a good landlord.
Yeah. Right. So you've said there, we'll put to bed the nice guy thing. So a good segue into the takeover. I'm not going to ask you to speak on behalf of all Newcastle fans. I think this is a kind of thing that every Newcastle fan has to have their own feelings about and so on. But first, such a like the excitement around it and that, you know, why are Newcastle fans so excited about it after all this time?
Well, I mean, when I started watching Newcastle when I was young, I mean, it was the very beginning of the Keegan era and us being exciting. And I think that was probably a big reason I fell in love with football. And since then, I mean, we've won nothing in the whole time that I've supported them. And the Mike Ashley era, you know, it's been miserable. And I think we talk about a bit, you know, being a Palace fan, being a Newcastle fan, being any one of the teams that hasn't got money in the Premier League. You know, to teams in League One, they might say, oh, it's not that bad. But you're watching dreadful football. You're getting beaten every week. You have the odd season in the Championship. You know, you've got nothing to look forward to. Your club is not... Nobody cares about your club. You know, the owners never cared. I said it probably best to someone, which was, there's been a dead pigeon hanging up underneath the Gallagher or one of the stands, I can't remember, that someone said, I just would like someone to go and remove it and give a bit of a blast with the jet washer of the stadium and give it a bit clean. You know, people talking about Mbappe and Haaland, they're joking, they're having a laugh. Maybe in the years to come, we become like Man City, but being Newcastle, I can see us messing it up. But we're just enjoying the fact that we can hope, that we can think about, you know, yet this season, right now, we deserve to be relegated based on the performances in the first 8 games. And I think we'll get to January. We may well be in a tough position, but there's a chance that we might spend our way out of it, which, you know, we haven't always. And then we can start and look forward to trying to get involved in FA Cups and in the league and just doing all right. You know, everyone expects Newcastle fans to think, you know, people say, oh, they all want the Champions League. They all want this, that, and the other. We just don't want to go to, you know, winnable third round cup ties, playing our first 11 and then getting turned over by, you know, Oxford United or
mate,
whatever
you,
else.
It just sounds like you're talking about Palace. You could just come on air every week and no one would know.
So familiar, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we went to Watford in the League Cup second round this season, full first team 11 against Watford second string, and they turned us over 1-0.
But of course, you get that excitement and, I mean, it's like the Joker said in Batman, you know, it's like a dog chasing the car. You wouldn't know what to do if we got there. I don't know what we would do if we won a trophy. I don't know what I would go off the radar. I mean, if we won the League Cup, I'd die a happy man. And we're now talking about potentially being a big club again. In 10 years, it might be that you've got, you know, all 20 clubs in the Premier League have got huge foreign investment. And I don't know whether I look forward to that or not, but I guess there's been year after year of teams like City having loads more and Chelsea having loads more and winning things because of that. So it would just be nice to think that we could, you know, it could be our time for a bit. So,
yeah, mate, I'm with you. When Liverpool won the league a couple of years ago, I was having arguments with all my Liverpool supporting mates who are from London. And it's like, well, I assume you're all on the chain up to Liverpool to celebrate. And they was like, no, why would I be? I was like, why would you be? If Palace won the League Cup, I'd be on top of the Arthur Waite stand at the stadium drinking beers, waving a flag for probably the next 2 weeks. I might get sacked from my job if I don't remember to book it off as annual leave.
It's like if we even qualified for the Europa Conference, I would be in Albania 2 weeks before the first preliminary fucking away leg, just hanging out.
Yeah, definitely. Don't know what they've got. So then, obviously, that aside, you've got rid of Ashley, which you've all been hoping for a while now. Now, I said on last week's pod, there are no millionaires and billionaires who are decent people, which pretty much sums up everyone who owns every Premier League club. They're going to have done something horrible in the past at some point. But a little bit of taking the biscuit here. Does it trouble you at all having owners who you know have the track record that they do?
That is a tough question. I mean, it's one of those that, like, it niggles a bit, but it's, you know, whenever I have a discussion with people, it's exactly what you said, you know, who is a leader of a country who hasn't got blood on their hands, or who is a billionaire who hasn't got blood on their hands? You know, human rights records, all these things. There's loads of countries that are pretty bad in this space, and they own football clubs. And I think, you know, I think Shearer got labelled as being a poster boy for it. Actually, he sat on Match of the Day and said, it's good that people are talking about this. You know, you call it sports washing on one hand, but at least if people are putting a bit of pressure on them or talking about these things and becoming aware of them, maybe they could do something about it. But you got to separate yourself and say, it's football. And for all the Newcastle fans that do go and watch it, most of them probably haven't got the knowledge or to really argue about this kind of thing. And I mean, even I don't fully. So you can only say, look, there's investment into the club. We're happy to see in the back of Ashley. Would have loved a Geordie gazillionaire to have taken it over and been able to invest in this way. But it's just not the way that the world works. So we've just got to enjoy what we can.
So one of the things that is the worry from a lot of Premier League clubs, and there was apparently a very spiky meeting this week, is around how investment gets into the club. Now, City went down this route in terms of trying to sell stupidly lucrative sponsorships being bought by owners, or, you know, that already the owners of the club, basically a way of them to kind of launder money into the club. Now, very succinct for us having you on and playing you this week, because it's Steve Parish who's at the meeting is the one who said, basically, I don't give a fuck about who they are. And if they want to threaten to sue us, we're all voting against this, and it's voted against. Do you think it should just be allowed that they can pay the 100 quid for your shirt sponsorship, or?
Well, first of all, Steve Parish, I've got a lot of time for. I enjoyed your Amazon documentary, and it's given me a weird soft spot for Crystal Palace, which I already had knowing you anyway. But and whenever the Super League stuff came about, he spoke with a lot of sense, and I think he always speaks with a lot of sense about owning a football club. I think it's tough to hear the top six clubs, you know, sort of get on their high horse and say, oh, we're going to try and block this, you know, because we want to be the sixth. There's always protection from the big clubs.
That was what the Super League fundamentally was. It was protecting.
Exactly. And I think the sad reality, if you're not a Newcastle fan, is they'll find a way of doing it. And even if it's voted against, they'll do it anyway. And, you know, you only look to the punishment that Man City got. You know, they got a ban for breaching financial fair play, and it ended up getting turned into a very small fine, and you're still fined in the Champions League. I mean, it's not in FIFA, UEFA, the Premier League. It's in nobody's interest to turn away the kind of money that these guys want to bring. Mm. And so, you know, you can all go and vote and say, look, you know, you're not going to have da-da-da. They will find a way. And who says that a Saudi company that turns up and buys a sponsorship deal is connected? Are you just going to block all Saudi companies? How does it work? I mean, somebody joked to me this week that there'll be a tiny little Saudi Arabian club who'll just buy John Joe Shelby for 200 million quid, just like you were starting up a football manager save, and that's it. You'll have your money.
Go on, Nick.
Yeah, I read an article on. I actually bought an Athletic subscription today. I bit the bullet and finally spent a few quid. And you had a chap called Lee Charnley that attended the meeting today. And I'm going to quote from The Athletic, and this is really aimed at Terence, because I don't have a clue what it means. They said, they just didn't turn up except for Lee Charnley, who sat there and read a statement like he was at a German wedding.
Yeah, I found that, like, that because they'd obviously had a source who was ever writing that article. I found a few things in there kind of a bit like close to the line, out of order, and probably not very PC. That person's obviously never been to a German wedding, because German weddings go to about 7 in the morning and you're raving and getting really incredibly pissed. So I think he's alluding to that he was very straight, just no humour whatsoever is what he's getting at. But even that, I mean, that's what I say, and they've just hung that guy out to dry. He's the outgoing CEO, right? He's Ashley's bloke, and he's not going to be there.
Well, he was a managing director, but he earned something like 125 grand, which, by the way, I would love to earn. But, you know, when I think it was often compared with other people in those positions in other football clubs, and it was nothing. And he'd had this miraculous rise of sort of being an advisor. He's been with the club sort of 20 years, knows it sort of inside out, and he'd gone from being a sort of an advisor to just a yes man for the Ashley regime. And he seemed totally hopeless. And I don't know what they're doing sending him there. I don't know whether they just thought, you know what, we don't care, so we're going to send this guy. Mm. It just wasted time, that guy. But I can imagine he did just go and read a statement, which probably was reading between the lines, we don't care what you think. We're doing what we want.
Well, Nick's just put in our chat here, Geordie Phil Alexander. We have a similar sort of person who's worked his way out within Palace and has, like, I think he's on the board of the Football League and stuff like that. But we refer to him as Teflon Phil because nothing can touch him. He's been at the club in a very senior position through two administrations, and somehow he survived each regime by just basically being a yes man, I guess. But
I guess he makes a good cup of tea.
Right, so then, weekend coming up, you're obviously coming to Selhurst Park. No wins in 8 Premier League games for Newcastle. Obviously, only one win in the same time for Palace. But our seasons couldn't be more different.
Yeah, I mean, I watched you guys against Arsenal and I thought you were fantastic and deserved the win. And to have Arsenal cheering like that to get a 2-2 draw, you know, it's ridiculous. I think if you'd won that game, I would probably be thinking, oh, you know, we might be able to go in and nick a result at Palace, because you'll be thinking, hey, we've cracked it here. And quite often teams like ours go off and deliver a big result against a big club and then just trip up against someone useless. And we are someone useless. and I think we often talk about, you know, we're a great team if a club's been on a winless run to play. I think we both say that. Like, we always just turn over, roll over. New manager effect. Well, we'll have Graham Jones in the dugout, and I think he's been tactically pretty good. I'd love us to go and get a win, but I think is Zaha going to be back at the weekend?
Very likely. He had a cold apparently. So
yeah, I think if he's back in, it gets really difficult for us. And I think I think we'd be very happy just to stop the rot and get a draw, get a point, another point on the road, we'd be happy with. Of course, I'd love us to get a new manager bounce, but I find it hard to think we're going to get anything there.
So we've got obviously Jonjo Shelvey suspended after his red card. Jamal Lascelles and Isaac Hayden. What's this? They had a scrap, did they? I mean, this happens a lot more often in football than we know about. I think the two of them would just get on with it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, good. I don't think it's a problem. I think it's like, you know, both of them have come out as good characters in the dressing room in the past. I think they disagreed on whether Bruce should be there or not. I think a lot of the players went off after Sunday and thought that he got the tactics wrong when we went a goal up. And so they're a little scrap about it, but I don't think it'll be a problem at the weekend. But I mean, I watched Jamie Carragher on Monday Night Football tear our defence to shreds, and you know, it is a Championship defence. We've not strengthened there, whereas you guys have sort of got two good centre halves in. You've got your young right back Mitchell. We look really shaky at the back, and I think with Benteke's direct, and you've got you know, you've got Ayew and Zaha able to do damage, and Edouard looks good. I mean, it's a worrying fixture, but yeah.
Well, you've got the great Crystal Palace equaliser, though, in Callum Wilson. How's his hamstrings and knees looking like? Because we could do with him being out, or picking up a slight strain before this weekend's game.
He's been fine, to be fair, because we nicked a result last year, and that was... You know, we won 2-0, didn't we, against the run of play right at the end. And that again, was a bit like Steve Bruce's look throughout the 2 years. You know, you compare him with Rafa and people say he did well. It was games like that where we were totally outplayed. And then just while you were pressing for a winner, we went and caught you on the break a couple of times. And, you know, but Callum Wilson, he's fit. Sam Maximan's fit. And I think going forward, we've got plenty to sort of make teams worry. But I just, it's whether you can string together the discipline for 90 minutes. That's the thing I worry about. We'll just see.
Yeah, and then the other doubt, Miguel Almirón, now talking about teams and how they do against you. When a player can't score a goal for love nor money, who did Almirón score his first goal against?
Yeah, I was there. He scored, the roar in the crowd was fantastic. But I mean, he came across as such an exciting player from the MLS at Atlanta, and he's electric fast. But Steve Bruce has been playing him at defensive midfield. He's sort of like, oh, just sit in front of the back four and then break really quickly if you can. And we've not got the best out of him. So it's tough because you've got a few players like Sam Maximan and Almirón and even Jacob Murphy who, if you let them, you know, get a run, then they'll be fine. But you need that defensive discipline to sort of let a couple of them go. And he's one that could. But we've benched at the weekend, so we'll have to see if he gets back in.
I like the idea that Steve Bruce is on the training pitch going to Almirón. Do you know what I see when I see you? Kante. You're the next Kante. Just slot in front of the back four, mate. You'll break up play all day long. Right. Predictions. It'd be nice to get a prediction from a Newcastle fan. So what's the score going to be, mate?
I mean, I'd be very happy with 1-1. So that's what I'll go for.
Okay. Nick?
We're due to give somebody a right old hammering. I'm sorry, Chris, but we've been playing so bloody well that we deserve something. And I'm just recalling when we turned you over 5-0 last time. You were rubbish, and I don't think you've done much business since then. So I'm going 4 or 5-0 again for Palace because we're going to be chomping at the bit. And as he said, you've got a championship defence. We've got Elise, we've got Wilf, we've got Edouard. We've even got... I could even see Guaita scoring against you. Like, the truth
how
told.
Easy. Yeah.
One of his way with clearances. you've got to get a tonkin. You've got to really hit rock bottom before you can come back up again. And you haven't hit rock bottom yet. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we had that, didn't we? A couple of times in the times that we come up, we got spanked by Fulham 4-1. We got spanked by Sunderland 4-0. And it was at that point that we could actually, you know, all the tension could be let loose and everyone could have it all out in the changing room. And that is right. That's how you start to climb back up. Just for misremembering sake, it was 5-1 because you've got to remember Cisse scored and gave it to the Holmesdale. And then as we proceeded to win 5-1, it was Cisse, what's the score for about 15 minutes.
Yeah. I was thinking, this was 7 years ago, though, wasn't it?
I mean, it was so long ago. Connor Wickham got 3 assists in that game. And I mean, I think he's played about 19 minutes of football in the last 4 years. So
7 of those were for Preston.
Podgy was our manager then, I think, and he's been to you and many other clubs since, if I remember rightly. I'm pretty sure he was our manager.
It was quite a while back now, that's for sure. Hesketh, I'll let you go next because I've got a lot of pressure on my prediction this week because I'm two correct in a row. So,
yeah, I mean, I hear everything Nick says. I think we're playing really well. We've got Wilf coming back, who's obviously our best player. Newcastle are in bad form. Everything points to a fairly comfortable Palace win. However, I never predict wins because that's ridiculous. And friend of the show, miserable Dave Perry, who hasn't been to a game this season because he is a dad. Congratulations, Dave. Is going to his first game of the season on Saturday. And even he's been saying that we're playing well. So I'm going to say 1-0 Newcastle.
I mean, to be honest, I'm shocked to hear that someone let miserable Dave close enough to them to impregnate. But like, obviously, congratulations, Dave. Top stuff, mate. My prediction is I can't see Callum Wilson not scoring. And there are always a lot of goals in that game. So I'll go 3-1 Palace for this one, which is my first predicted win. So I'll undoubtedly be wrong. Basically, I've predicted 2-2 twice in the last two games, Chris. So nailed it because I don't know what else to say.
And what have you got for that?
What, in terms of cash money?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's just props on this pod. That's all. No one even cares either.
I've got a random dice generator in the absence of Mr. Curly.
Okay,
go on. Shall I do it? It's on another screen. Hang on.
Go on.
Unfortunately, I can't do sound effects. Okay, dice number one says 4.
Oh.
Dice number 2.
4-2 Palace. There you go. Yeah. I'll take it. I think there'll be goals. I think there will be goals. We seem to start slow. Don't be surprised if you take the lead. But yeah, I thought I could see a 4-2, a 3-1. I can see any sort of variation to that. There's gonna be goals, that's for sure. Right, that's your lot for this week. First of all, thanks to Chris for joining. Really appreciate that, mate. Good to get your insight on Newcastle. Nick, thank you for standing in for Mr. Curley. Heskiff, as always, you miserable bastard, predicting a 1-0 Newcastle win. I love it. Who we got next? Anyone know?
Man City.
I've
got DL driving me up there, haven't I? Hopefully he won't leave, so we get there at 3:20 like we did. we got to Liverpool. They say you'll never walk alone. Poor Chris Clark was, because he couldn't keep up with us. We left him behind.
Okay. Well, that's a Saturday game, isn't it? So we'll be back in your ears on Thursday morning next week. We'll also, I guess, be covering off Wimbledon in the Papa John's. Are you coming, Heskiff?
Yep.
Yeah, new ground, the new plough lane. So,
if we win the Papa John's trophy, what stand will you be drinking beer on then?
I tell you what, we won't get out of the group in the Papa John's trophy because we've already been annihilated by Sutton. So, I don't doubt it. But no, thank you to everyone for listening. Look out for the match report on Sunday, and until next week, up the Palace.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.